Episode 54 of the Millionaire Mindcast. Approaching your passion like an Olympian with the one, the only, Mr. Mike McCarthy.
Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Maddie A.
Welcome into another episode of Millionaire Mindcast, the show where mindset and money meet. My name is Maddie A. As always, I am your host. And I just want to start by saying thank you for tuning in. We are gaining so much momentum right now. It's because we're getting some new ears and some new eyes on the podcast, and it's really exciting. So if you're new, this is your first episode, thanks for checking it out. And if you are a committed returning listener, I gotta share the love. I'm really excited for today's episode for a couple of reasons, but there's a few parts in it where the audio's a little choppy, and that's what I get for allowing one of my best friends to come on the show. Mike McCarthy is our millionaire worth modeling today, and he is a wealth of knowledge. This guy has become a great friend of mine over the last few years and has been a really great mentor. He has over 40 real estate offices with over 6,000 agents, one of the largest regions in Keller Williams in greater Pennsylvania area. And he's just a really learning-based individual, very spiritual, and he has one of the biggest hearts that you'll ever meet with anybody. And those are the kind of people that I love surrounding myself with. And it's really an honor to be able to get him on the show, because every time him and I have these conversations, he's not a big podcast guy. And, you know, I was trying to convince him to come on the show. And I said, dude, you have so much to share with everybody else. I feel like every time I get into a conversation with him, I just have these, you know, mind expanding and mind exploding ahas, and he's just one of those guys where every time you're around him, you learn something new. So today, I am excited to dive in. We focus a lot on leadership. I mean, you can imagine having 40 offices and over 6,000 agents that look to you and your company. You better have some good leadership, right? So Mike is always looking to not only pour into his own leadership and raise his leadership lid, but pouring back into his people. And I love that about him. He dives in and shares some really cool stuff on that. We talk about habits and practices, his commitment to personal development, and we get into an interesting conversation on allowing the ego to overpower you. And he shared some great ways of how you can identify when your ego is present. I think a lot of us can relate to having at least some experience where our ego has showed up and not necessarily served us in a very good way. So we talk about that, and we also talk about how ego in the wealth building journey can really hinder you. And Mike touches on this idea of net worth versus self-worth and how you can make sure that you don't fall into that trap. So really great content in this episode. We get deep. You'll see that he's just got a very calm and welcoming energy about him, and he knows his stuff. So strap in, get your notepad out. Take some great notes. If you don't have the ability to take notes from wherever you're listening at this moment, don't worry. We got the show notes up on millionairemindcast.com, where you can find all the links and references that Mike talks about specifically in the episode. And we got tons of other episodes on there, so feel free to roam around. My main squeeze, the brains of the whole organization, my right-hand gal, Candace, has just revamped the website, so check it out. Enjoy the interview. That's it from me for now, and I just want to remind you, if you are enjoying these episodes, the interviews, the content that is being shared, the greatest gift, greatest compliment that you can pay me and pay our podcast and everybody that works so hard on it to continue to bring you guys the freshest, most relevant, and best content to empower you on unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. Pop over to iTunes, take 2 minutes, leave us a positive review, or give us some honest feedback. And we do read those, we do listen, and we use that in order to guide us moving forward. Thanks for allowing us to have a bigger impact, a bigger reach. And by taking those 2 minutes, it means the world. All right, that's enough for me. Let's go ahead and dive into the episode. what has been your journey? Have you always been a great leader? What has been your journey up until this point? Because knowing your history, knowing your backstory, you know, I think we can both agree that that wasn't always the case for you. And so I'm curious to know, you know, let people know where you started, where you're at today, and then obviously we can kind of dissect what that journey has brought out in you.
Yeah, love it. Love the question. And, you know, I think that you asked the question, have I always been a great leader? And I would say the answer to that question is no. Now, have I always thought I was a great leader? I think the answer to that question would be yes, that I've always felt called to leadership. But I think leadership is something that we really learn over time. And I think there's a willingness and a courageousness to leadership that we have to get naturally, and a desire to carry responsibility and to make decisions. I think that is sort of the seeds for leadership. But to become a great leader, I think you have to first acknowledge that at some point you were a not so great leader. And I think it's in that space of acknowledging what you're not good at that we can truly grow and become a great leader. And I would say today I'm still working on that.
There's a lot of people that always say, you know, the toughest person to lead is actually yourself. So when you were in the space of maybe, you know, looking back, not necessarily being the best leader, and now having an organization, how many agents do you have under your company, and what does your revenue look like? And, you know, I just want people to be able to wrap their head around first and foremost of what, you know, a quote unquote bad leader has now accomplished. And obviously we need to figure out where those transitions happened in order for you to get to this level, because you are leading a ton of people. You are creating a lot of opportunity. You're making a significant impact in many different spaces. And I consider you a very, very awesome leader. So I want people to know, you know, what does your business landscape look like? Because that requires some pretty high-level leadership, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a partner in several businesses, but the business that is my main bread and butter business, which I've been operating for the past 15 years, is the Greater Pennsylvania region, which is Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware for Keller Williams Realty. And I've been lucky to have been involved with this company from its early stages, and in a lot of ways grow up with that company. And you know, the main thing has just been being learning based, which I learned from guys like Gary Keller and David Osborne along the way, of continually growing. And right now our region is at its all-time high in so many different categories. But what I'm most proud of is that we have over 40 offices, and within those offices we have over 6,000 agents. And the way I look at that is that, you know, those are 6,000 people and their families too, who I have a chance and an opportunity to, in some way, and hopefully in a big way, make a difference for them. So I think that's my main business, is that has been selling franchises and then leading franchise owners who in turn build amazing offices. And that's been my main space.
So to get this definition, because everybody obviously has different understandings and definitions of different words, what does leadership mean to you first and foremost?
Wow, what a great question. You know, I think to me what leadership is identifying the energy and the strengths within certain aspects of an organization, so groups of people, and then being able to contribute and to pour into the people who are within whatever that organization may be in such a way that they're inspired towards whatever your vision might be. And if we want an even simpler answer, I would just say, and I've learned this from my mentors, is that, you know, the definition of leadership is really teaching people how to think so that they do what they need to do, so that they can have what they want when they want it. And so I think it's pouring into people, it's teaching people, and it's acknowledging that a true hero is somebody who pours their life and makes their life about something greater than themselves. And so I think at its core, that's what leadership means to me.
Great answer. What would you attribute to your success in your organizations, in your life, in your world outside of leadership? If you were to say a particular habit or maybe an approach or principle or practice that you live or act by on a daily basis, what would that look like?
No, for me, I think it's I would have to just center it around personal development, because I think you mentioned something already on this call, which was to the effect that, you know, we first have to be able to lead ourselves before we can lead anyone else. And to that point, I would say anyone who said that statement probably didn't have a 2 or a 3-year-old, by the way, which I'm sure you can relate, because I think that would, because I would rather try to lead myself before a 2 or a 3-year-old. But outside of that, I think, you know, working on yourself, becoming who you need to be, first and foremost, is so important. And I think a lot of people, and I did this myself, we try to skip over that step, and we want to be a leader of others and to make things happen. But what happens is we look and we see that while we might be making things happen, nobody's following us. And if nobody's following you, you're really just out for a walk. You're not leading anybody. And the whole point of leadership is to bring a group of people towards a common vision and common goal. So if you're a leader who's doing things on their own or putting the weight of the world on your shoulders and you're out there making it happen, that might be admirable and respectful in certain ways, and that's important, but that's not really leadership. That's just you. You're a one-man army, a one-man team. So I think we have to be able to develop our own personal gifts and capabilities, and that involves letting go of a lot of things that we aren't, a lot of bad habits, identities, egos, and things that we build up around ourselves to protect who we are. And so I think if we can let go of that and really step into greatness and get better and commit to getting better every day, I think that's when people will truly be inspired and want to work with you or want to follow you, so to speak. So I think you boil it down to like working on yourself. That's sort of the precursor to being able to lead anyone else.
Yeah, it's a great point. Your business or your life grows to the extent that you do. And as cliche as that may sound to a lot of people, by continuing to elevate and re-innovate yourself, your world and the people who come in and leave your world, they see what kind of person you're becoming and what you stand for. One of the great books that I read that kind of helped me get out of my own way and actually step into, because that was one of my next questions, is, you know, how do you really step into greatness? And for me, it was one of those things of stepping into authenticity, which allowed me to then take that next step of becoming a better leader or becoming a better business owner or a better parent or father. But the Brené Brown book of The Gifts of Imperfection, when I actually stepped into my authentic self and identified actually what that was, I was able to create more opportunity, relationships, communication, energy, whatever you want to call it, in my own world that was just me. And it allowed more of those things that aligned and were a reflection of that to actually be a reality, instead of having all of these other, you know, external influences pushing and pulling me in different directions. And so for a lot of people that want to find a way to level up their leadership or step into that greatness, what would be some recommendations or, you know, books or seminars or advice on how they can maybe take that next step?
Yeah, that's a great segue. And you know, here's what my answer would be, Matt, is that the biggest thing for me was that, you know, I've had my ebbs and flows of having really great success and then also having big, massive failures. So I've had this, you know, cycle where I would have great success. I would start reading my own press clippings and in getting moving towards a little bit of arrogance or cockiness, and then stop working on myself as hard as I was, and I would get sort of depressed, and I would start to have some problems, and then I would start focusing on my problems. And it was a downward sort of spiral out of efficiency, out of success, out of greatness. And I've had, you know, the opportunity in my life to then tap into a great coach and a great mentor and surround myself with great people. So when I wasn't where I needed to be, what I really needed, Matt, was to be realistic about where I was. And that's not to beat myself up or to look at all of my problems, but to really look at my life with a sense of gratitude and to look at the fact that I'm not broken. There's not something wrong with me. I am enough. I just am not making the right choices right now. And so coming from a place of, you know, making better choices and looking at what my true strengths are, and then also looking up and looking around me and saying, okay, who do I need to surround myself with in order to be more successful? And so that's what I would say is the first step, is look at yourself as already awesome, as already having greatness inside of you, and that all you need to do is be exposed to the right people and the right experiences that will help lead you to success. So your job is then to just go find who those people are. And it could be people that you read about in books, or that you do their courses, or you listen to their podcasts, and you start to try to become more like they are. And those qualities that you want to become more like, the fact that you can even identify with them and see that that's a quality that you'd like to become more like, it's already an indication that you have the capacity and the capability to become that. So look at yourself as whole. Find people who can help you, and then accept their advice and their counsel and listen to what they're saying so that you can make the changes that will enable you to not become great, because you're already great, but for you to be able to see that greatness emerge in the world in a new way. And that's what we're really looking for when we want to become great, is we just really want to make a difference in some way with that greatness, because if it's not celebrated and it makes no difference to anybody, then that's really just feeding ego. And I think all of us deep down, we really want to contribute and be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, tapping into your greatness, into all of our own individual greatness, is the clearest pathway to do that.
Yeah, I love what you said about don't read your own press clippings, because I think a lot of people can have some success and see that momentum building. And one of the ways that I heard this on another podcast I was listening to the other day is a guy was saying, you know, how do you, you're so successful and you've accomplished this and you've accomplished that, and how do you, you know, stay level-headed and stay grounded? And the guy who responded said, you know, I use gratitude. Gratitude is my gravity, and it keeps me grounded. It keeps me in a space where I'm aware of, you know, whatever accolades, whatever accomplishments, that doesn't matter. It's, you know, what blessings and amazingness do I have in my life, and what can I be grateful for outside of all that stuff? And I'm curious to know, you talked about, you know, failure being something that really can be humbling. It can kind of tear down the ego a little bit. And we all know that, you know, every failure with it brings an equivalent seed of advantage and learning. And what was one of your biggest failures, you know, professional or personal, that you're willing to share that really kind of humbled you? And what did you learn from it? And then how did you proceed forward, and how has it served you as you've continued to grow and elevate yourself?
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, the story I want to share with you goes all the way back to high school. And you know, I think it was being part of a cross-country team, which, you know, as you know, in high school, it's the cross-country team rules. It's always the captain of the cross-country team is usually the homecoming king. And, you know, that's how it was at your high school, right, Matt?
I don't know about that.
So, no, but anyways, you know, I was on the cross-country team.
Are you writing another story in your head, Mikey?
Yeah, maybe. I'm reframing my high school experience. But in all honesty, like, you know, I ran cross country. I wanted to be a football player. I wasn't as big come freshman year as everybody else. In fact, wasn't before then either, but they were getting bigger and bigger. And I discovered a sport called running, which I hated. And I discovered that I was good at it, though, and then I started liking it. It's amazing how that happens. And, you know, after I realized that I was pretty good at running, and I qualified for state my sophomore year, and I lettered before most of my football player counterparts did. And you know, it was an amazing experience to be on this varsity team and to just go to state. And so I got it in my mind that I would, you know, we would win state our senior year of cross country. And I started saying it. I started telling people that. I started working like somebody who wanted to win state and ran all summer. And our junior year, we had an incredible season. We went to state. We didn't do that well, but, you know, we had performed very nicely. And it was a great experience for me my junior year. My senior year, a lot of guys started joining the cross country team. There was a little more excitement around it, and I got to see for myself what having just a little bit of vision towards a big goal could do for a team, because there was definitely more excitement my senior year around our team and cross country in general than the previous year. And all of that was great, except for, again, I was the best runner on the team. That was my identity. And what happened was my senior year, a few of the younger guys started beating me. And I had an incredible opportunity at that time, Matt, to become an awesome leader for my team by supporting the guys who were beating me and making it about the team. But what happened was I couldn't take it. My ego couldn't handle that these guys were beating me. I was the leader. I had the vision. I was my senior year. And so, you know, I wasn't who I needed to be, and these guys did very well. But when it came time for regionals, Matt, for going to state, we all choked, and we didn't make it. And there are so many lifelong lessons that I've taken just from that experience, because, you know, it could have been, the possibility was there, but the right leadership, even on my part, and on some level on the coaching, didn't show up. And so it's always just stuck with me. And so I really try to be aware of and more and allow more space for other people to have the spotlight. And so I've really worked hard to be in a position where when the team succeeds, and even if there's a standout player that's not me, which there always is now, that I really give the recognition where it's due. And it's a lesson in ego, because at that point in my life, you know, as a high schooler, and I'm sure you can relate, there was a lot of ego, and it was more important that I was the best on the team, even if the team didn't perform as well. And so that was just a humbling experience that came to mind. So I figured I would throw that one out there.
Yeah, I love it. I think there's a lot of value in that response of just, well, one, I want to say you are really good at giving people the credit when they deserve it. And you're really good at lifting people up when they need it as well. You know, I've been able to work with you closely in a lot of different aspects of business, and to see how you lead your people, how you give them opportunity, how you give them a platform, you know, you've really become a great advocate for the people in your organization. And I think that's a great attribute that any leader should possess, you know, being able to champion other people's success and not have to be the front runner, the one, you know, taking all the credit for it is really important. You know, you don't want it to, I know a lot of people who it's the me show all the time. And that at the end of the day only goes so far with people. You know, they don't feel like they have any identity within the opportunity or the relationship, because it's all about you all the time. And so being able to reciprocate that back, I feel like a lot of great leaders have really high emotional intelligence, and they understand how to navigate that relationship when it comes to, you know, leading others and also leading yourself. So I want to commend you on that. You talked about it being a great lesson in ego. How does someone check themselves when the ego shows up? Because sometimes it's like, am I being a little, is my ego talking here, or am I wrong here? You know, sometimes I have to myself look back and go, you know, I don't want to let the ego make the decision or let the ego drive what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. And then sometimes, you know, there's other people that will tell you, well, ego is also what, you know, strategic ego is what separates certain people who are amazing and great versus those that aren't, because it's not necessarily, I don't know, is it a confidence thing, or is it a cockiness thing, or is it a mixture of the two? How do people identify that?
Yeah, wow, there's a lot there, and I can't. So the ego part is funny. So the way you said that is like, it, you know, asking yourself like, hey, is ego? I would say if you're asking yourself if ego's involved, mm-hmm. that's a definite sign that it is. So that's step one for me. And I would say too that to get past the noise of your ego, which is, by the way, for how we normally live our lives, probably 99% of what we're hearing and acting upon is ego. So it definitely can't be all bad, because if most of us are operating primarily out of ego, right? We're human beings. We're physically here in our bodies. So if we're supposed to operate out of ego to some degree, because our reptilian or lizard brains, whatever you want to call it, they're designed to protect us. They're designed to do it by having what we call a deficit-based approach, though, to everything. So, you know, we're constantly measuring and calculating and competing and alerting for possible danger and situations. And I think in that space, what happens is there's very little creativity. There's very little expansiveness. There's very little choice or options. So for me, the ego is the most demanding voice. So if it's yelling, if something inside of me is screaming towards something, then that's probably ego. Now, if I do the work, which I've been trained to and train others to do, where you can ground yourself and get more centered and get more connected to your higher self, right? To your deeper intuition, or your unconscious mind, your subconscious, whatever you want to call it. But if you can really tap into that, that's where you'll hear guidance and get information and solutions and create things that the ego just can't comprehend and doesn't want any part of. So I would say that unless you're really working on getting in a state of flow and getting to a place of complete clarity and relaxation where you've turned off sort of that instinct to protect yourself and that flight or fight response, which takes work, then you're probably operating out of ego. And, you know, I think it's the healthiest thing to do is really to acknowledge like, hey, yes, I'm acting out of ego. The voice, the noise, my tendencies to want to be the best, to do it. It's disempowering to the ego to look at it square in the face and go, hey, thanks for your input, ego. You know, I even named my ego. I call it the Terminator.
The Terminator.
So I'll say, hey, Terminator, thanks. I appreciate your opinion on this, but perhaps sending a ranting email of 5 or 6 sentences long isn't the best option for me to resolve this problem. I appreciate your input, but I don't need it. And in that, I'm not making the ego wrong, by the way, because we make the ego wrong, it takes up arms against us. It resists us even harder. So I try to not make my ego wrong and love it, accept what it's saying, but choose to not always act on it. And for me, a win is if I can not act on ego maybe 1 in 10 times. That's a win for me, and I've worked on it for the last 8 years with awareness, and I probably still act more out of ego than not. So, you know, it's a constant thing to be very aware of.
Yeah, that's a great point, is to actually, I think for some people, you know, I think of myself a few years back, I would have said, well, how the hell do you tap into your higher self or that higher awareness? And I'm curious what your response would be to that question.
Yeah, how do you tap in? I mean, I would read a book called Spirit Led instead. So Spirit LED and then the word Instead by Janai Lane. And then I would go through her group online courses, and I would do her actual physical workbook. It's called a playbook. And I would get with somebody who can create a space for you to look at yourself without judgment, which is very – it's easier said than done. And that it requires a very loving space. And so you either have to create that space for yourself by reading and being willing to meditate, so following guided meditations, using a gratitude journal, journaling in general, even just doing things that make your heart sing will pull you out of your ego. So, you know, making a list of things you really love to do and making sure that you get to do those on a regular basis. Taking care of your body and your health, I think, are vital. But at the end of the day, anybody has access to intuition, and everybody has used it before. Everybody has tapped into their higher self, even if it was on an unconscious level. So I would say to be paying attention to, you know, are you reacting to everything, or are you creating what you really want? Because my coach, Janai, taught me that reaction and creation are two sides of the same coin. They're opposite ends of the spectrum, you know, and you're either doing one or the other at any given time. And they're actually the same letters in a different order, creation and reaction. And so you got to pay attention to whether you're in a creation phase or stage, which is going to be, it's going to feel uplifting and positive, and it's going to be subtle. Whereas, you know, if you're in reaction and it's heavy, it feels hard. You're trying to win something or prove a point. And so I think getting really clear on the whisper of your higher self is always going to be drowned out by the screaming of your ego. So you have to find a way to create some silence and some space to where you can really clearly hear what it is that your spirit, your intuition is telling you. And what I can share with you, Matt, is that the times when I've been able to follow what my spirit is telling me has opened up entire universes, opportunities, things that I could have never imagined that my ego still doesn't want to believe have happened, because it's not on board with how easy that could be. And so doing things that you don't normally do, that's listening to spirit. Doing the same things you always do, the same reactions, the same habits, same patterns, even if they're good habits and patterns, it's still ego. Wow. It's a pattern.
How has your ego tied in with your wealth building journey? Has it served you? Has it hindered you? Has it been a healthy mixture of both?
So, you know, that's such an interesting question, Matt. I love that you asked that. And here's how I would answer that, is that my ego has driven my entire wealth building process entirely. I mean, it is at the core, there's this part of me that is driven to prove that I'm enough and that I have worth. And that part of me is my ego. And by the way, that's the same part of me that's amassed a lot of very successful businesses. So, you know, unfortunately, and this is just the real answer, it's that, you know, in and of itself, if we're not careful and left unchecked, you know, pursuit of money in general can be very much ego driven. And then, you know, as a more awareness can emerge around that, what I would say is that the places where I've created the most wealth, though, and where I will continue to create and amass more wealth, are going to, in the future, come more from areas where I'm purely giving and serving for the sake and passion of whatever that particular project or organization is. And that's really a big thing to understand, because a lot of us, we might be chasing money to just chase money, which I've done as well, so I'm not making that wrong. But true wealth and true opportunity is going to be created when you you chase something or you pour yourself into something that you're just very passionate about and that you would love and you would probably do for free.
Yeah, there's so many people, me included, man. You know, we've had some of these conversations outside of this interview of it's hard a lot of the times to not get caught up in this pursuit of money and riches. And sometimes for a lot of people that listen in or that I have, you know, conversations with, it's because they're not at a certain financial milestone or don't have a certain amount of net worth, they are equating their net worth to their self-worth. And I'm curious to know what you would tell those people. What would you speak to them in regards to disconnecting those two things but still finding a way to charge forward towards it, but just staying aware that whatever you have in your bank account does not equal the value that you bring or necessarily the, you know, worth that you have?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing is to, for everybody that's listening, to really just hear this, because this is so important, is that we are all on this amazing, incredible journey, and the true wealth is not money. It's in the experiences that we have. It's in the people that we connect with. It's in the gifts that we get to give in the world, which, by the way, we've all come here to give gifts and to serve in a way that only you or we can do. So that's unique to each and every one of us. So, you know, if you're not at a place where abundance has blessed you, or you feel like you're really living your best life, the good news is that it's really a matter of you just really getting to know who you are at your core and what you truly love, because inside of that is a gift for you to give in the world. And it'll be something that you are passionate about. And by the way, it'll be something that if you follow it, if you truly take that passion as far as you can go with it. And I'm not talking about like, oh, I love real estate, so I'm going to get my license, and then actually after a year, I don't love it so much. And now I love something else and I'm chasing that. It's about really finding something that you love, and you'll know that it's something you love, and you'll know that you're destined to be blessed with abundance when you follow that passion all the way to the end. That is when you completely give yourself, your whole self, to whatever that is. Where, you know, you look at Albert Einstein or Tony Hawk, or you look at some of these people that are absolutely legendary in whatever their field is, they are blessed with massive abundance, and it's because they followed their passion. And I just believe that everybody has that. And it can sound a little airy-fairy, like, oh, just follow your passion and it'll all work out. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying take whatever your passion is and whatever you love and approach it like an Olympian would. Pour yourself into it. Master it at a level where people want to learn it from you. By the way, if you're doing that, you won't care about money, but it'll find you.
Damn.
You'll have what you need.
Deep right there. That's good stuff. That is, I think, an approach that not a lot of people take in regards to their passion. They take it by default and necessarily don't strategically find a way to engage and go hard charging in that direction. But oftentimes it's, you know, the other things, the money, the security, the things that we need in order as human beings to be fulfilled, in order for us to, you know, feel confident in taking that next leap. Who's been your mentor? And I know you've had many. I mean, we were just in a room 2-3 weeks back that was over $500 million with, you know, 10-15 guys in it. So I know you have a lot of mentors in this space personally, but I'm curious more so in the wealth building space. Who's really mentored you, and what is maybe one or two of the biggest takeaways that you implement every single day or every time you invest or something along the wealth building space?
I mean, my biggest mentor with wealth building would have to be David Osborne, without a doubt. And I know you've had him on before, and he's a mentor of yours as well. But as far as accumulating wealth, analyzing investments, and in that entire space, even businesses, investing, launching businesses, a lot of what I've known and what I've modeled in my life has come from David Osborne. And the number one lesson from David would be number one around hopium, where somebody's really excited about some particular investment, and you can tell by the way that they're approaching it and they're sharing it with you that they're totally sold on it, and they're not really asking for your opinion on it because they've already bought it. And so I try to be very aware of my own hopium and then other people's hopium and getting me involved with deals. And the other side of that is, you know, I always invest in the person before I do in the deal. So I'm always analyzing whether I believe that person can turn this investment into a win or the people involved in it, first and foremost, ahead of what the numbers or the actual deal say.
Mm, great input. What are one to two things that you feel you've done differently than, say, the 99% of people out there to unlock the financial success you've amassed?
You know, I don't know if it's different than others, because I can't speak to that, but I have noticed that I tend to err on the side of being over generous at any time that I can, and I think that that's really served me. And then I would say just another aspect of that would be, you know, my putting first and foremost how I treat people and how I lead people ahead of any type of financial decision.
That's awesome. That's something that I think a lot of people forget and don't necessarily lead with as that first step forward type mentality. And usually it's, you know, the third, fourth, or fifth thing down the list. Did someone teach you that, or is that just something that was naturally ingrained in you from a young age?
You know, I think that I've always had this sort of sense of abundance that there would be enough to go around. And so I just think I've had have been blessed with sort of a sense of abundance that there would always be enough. And I grew up in a, you know, middle class family, and it's not like we were hurting for anything, but it's not like we had our every whim appeased either. So I'm not sure exactly where that came from. I mean, my parents are also generous, but I tend to live that out to an uncomfortable level for most people around me. So, but I enjoy that, and I enjoy giving. So, you know, I think it comes from that. And, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, outside looking in, having you as a friend and how generous you've been to me and the impact you've had on me makes it that much easier of a no-brainer every time you come asking for something or you maybe need some help with. I am more than excited to be able to try and repay half of the value that you've given to me back to you. So I think, you know, to affirm that thought, I would say that you have definitely created a space where you have over-delivered, and it makes me feel that much more grateful to have the opportunity to repay that. And I'm sure all the other people in your businesses and your personal life would probably reflect in, you know, mirror that statement. So that's a great reflection of you, man, and kudos to you for that. I'm curious, as we kind of get closer to wrapping up, what are some of the most impactful wealth building books or, you know, personal books outside of what you've already mentioned?
You know, that's awesome. You know, I don't want to be cliche, because I'm sure everyone you ask that question to is giving you Think and Grow Rich. So I'm not going to say that one, or maybe I am.
You just did.
But, you know, I would say, you know, it's just what I'm studying right now. But if I were a leader of any size organization or business right now, I would be reading as much about appreciative inquiry as I possibly could. And I would pick up some books by David Cooper Ryder on appreciative inquiry. I think that, leading a group or being involved in an organization at a leadership level, I think is a great way to build wealth. And I think that the future of how we solve problems and come together as a group is changing. And I think there's a lot of ramifications and advantages within that technology that serve even individual people. So I would just say go check out appreciative inquiry.
Very cool. So what is one thing that you're super excited about right now in your business, your personal life? What are you doing right now that's, getting you fired up and you're excited to share with other people?
Yeah, I mean, number one thing right now would be the release of my first book, which is co-authored with my beautiful wife, Lindsay McCarthy, and our third wheel, Hal Elrod. And
I'm sure he's not used to being referenced as the third wheel.
I don't think he's written a book with Mike and Lindsay McCarthy before either. That is something. It's the miracle morning for parents and families. And, my wife and I have grown together as leaders and as people, as spiritual beings, as human beings. And she had the vision to really continue and start a miracle morning. She always had a morning practice. And when she met Hal at the One Life Fully Lived conference in Sacramento, she was inspired by him to do her miracle morning, even though she had a young, our daughter was just a newborn at the time. And she started committing to the practice, even though it was very difficult. And it really helped her to be an outstanding mother. She was already wonderful, but she just took it to another level. She started modeling the miracle morning in our family. We were doing it as a couple. And then even the kids started to tap into what we were doing. And so they started doing the miracle morning with Lindsay. And she came up with an acronym that the kids go through. If you know Hal's book, I know you do. It's the SAVERS, which are 6 personal development things to do every morning before you start your day. And instead of the SAVERS, Lindsay reframed them and recreated them with Tyler and called them the CHARMS. And so every morning, Tyler does his CHARMS. Tyler and Ember do, our children. And they focus on doing something creative, doing something healthy. They go through a set of affirmations. They read, or we read to them. Then they meditate or do a guided meditation. And then they do something to serve others. And so that's their formula as children for personal development. And we ask that they do that every morning before they get to access their electronics. And so I'm really proud. And I just share that with you because number one is check out the book and, look at what would it be like if you started teaching your children and modeling for them things like affirmations and meditation and service, and how does that impact you as a parent? If you're now modeling those things for your children, what a great situation, because now you've got the greatest accountability partners in the world, your children, because you've got a daughter, and for those of you listening, your children, they're going to call you out on your crap for sure. They don't forget. They know what you've committed to. So bring them into the processes where you need accountability. But we've done that, and it's enriched our lives. It's enriched our children's lives, and now we're seeing that other families are doing personal development as part of their miracle morning together, and it's having a big impact. So I'm really excited for two reasons. One, I get to be an author with Hal and Lindsay. We get to help enrich and help transform families and their home situations to be more positive and more fulfilling and meaningful. And also, I get to support my wife, who's now officially an entrepreneur and has her own business, because this was really her vision that she went after. And I get to see her realize her vision at the same time of being an author. And she started a blog for us called gratefulparent.com that she'll be sharing sort of our journey as parents and resources that, that we've tapped into that have helped us. But, you know, that by far is something that I'm just super excited about right now.
So cool, man. I'm just excited to be watching this from the outside looking in and to know you guys, to know your hearts, to know your passion for serving other people and truly just making a genuine impact. You guys are not looking for, you know, any repayment whatsoever, any pats on the back, and obviously you'll get a lot of that in the process, but you guys just do it with such an authentic, genuine, passionate place in your heart. And you know, there's not too many people out in this world that have committed to doing it at such a high level that you do in whatever vehicle, whether it's writing a book or, you know, leading real estate offices or mastermind groups. You are just a quality guy, an amazing friend, and I am grateful to have you in my world. So thanks for taking the time to spit some knowledge at our, you know, Millionaire Mindcast family. I want to officially welcome you as one of our interviewees and just say thanks again. Keep doing what you're doing. And if there's anything we can do to support you moving forward, we got your back, man.
Hey, Matt, I really appreciate you letting me take the time to hop on this podcast. And, you know, if you'll allow me, I just want to say something about you, and that is that watching you over the past couple of years and how you've grown and your dedication to take action on your dreams and to follow things that you're passionate about, and this podcast being a great example of that. I mean, you moved at lightning speed to launch this. You got it out there. You lined it up, and now you're just nailing it consistently every single week. You're bringing amazing content to people, and you're sharing knowledge, and you know, you're even letting guys like me get on here and share stuff. Because I was one funny thing is that no one ever asked me to be on a podcast until Lindsay wrote the book, and now this is my second podcast interview in the last week. So I'm like, thanks, Lindsay, this is great. I'm soon they're going to be saying, hey, is that Lindsay McCarthy's husband there? I think so.
Dude, you are a walking wealth of knowledge, and you could be on many podcasts, man. Keep doing what you're doing. And if anybody wants to connect with you, Mikey, and wants to know what you're up to, follow you on social media, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, just Facebook me, Mike McCarthy, and you can also find us on gratefulparent.com.
Keep being awesome. Well, there you have it. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Millionaire Mindcast. Man, that was a good interview. I hope you enjoyed learning from our guests as much as I did. And I'm sure like you, I'm always looking for that one new fresh nugget or resource or, you know, just piece of value that will inspire me to march a little bit harder or really maybe a little bit smarter and just change the way I look at a particular area of my life or business. And I hope you found that here in this interview. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you shared it with someone you feel could get some major value from it. We're getting a ton of new listeners to the show because of our amazing community doing just that, sharing it with others and trying to add value where they can. And if you're a new listener, thanks for joining us. I am honored to spend some time with you, as I know you have tons of listening options out there. So be sure to check out the show notes for this episode on millionairemindcast.com, where you'll find all the links to the resources and tools mentioned during the interview. Also, being that this is a wealth building podcast, we are going to be launching the Six Figure Series, which will highlight many ways you can make six figures in different wealth vehicles, in different industries, in different spaces, and strategically grow your wealth in the process. So the first course in the Six Figure Series we are launching soon for all those interested in real estate investing is the Six Figure Flipper, which will tell you everything you need to know about flipping houses start to finish in order to create a six-figure income stream through real estate. So whether you want it to be a side hustle, a full-time focus, or maybe you just want to further educate yourself on keeping up with HGTV and knowing what it really takes to be a flipper, this is a course with value that even if you did just one real estate investment from it would pay for itself tenfold. More importantly, if you learned and implemented these strategies and models correctly, this is information that can never be taken away from you and you can use to build your wealth through real estate investing for the rest of your life. And I don't know about you, but For me, it's more about not getting a fish and being fed for a day, but more so learning how to fish and feeding myself for a lifetime. And for those curious about real estate investing as a potential wealth building vehicle for you, in this intimate mastermind community, I'm going to be sharing all the models, all the systems I've personally used myself to flip over 100 houses in the last 5 years and consistently net multiple six figures. So if you want to learn more about the offering and receive the discounted pricing option before it launches, text the number 6 figure flipper, all one word, to 44222. Again, that's 6 figure flipper to 44222, and you'll automatically lock in the early bird pricing, whether you sign up or not. And if you have any interest, get on the list. I'll be sharing all kinds of cool information and investing tips, resources, tools, a lot of cool stuff leading up to the launch. So either way, being on the list, you'll get some great info on real estate investing and flipping in particular, and I'll have some special bonuses on there for you as well. So thanks in advance. I can't wait to continue supporting you on your march to a million and beyond. No matter what wealth building vehicle you choose, no matter what direction you decide to go with it, always remember, never stop investing in yourself and your wealth. Cheers, my friends.